You are the master of your reality. This is even more true in relation to the government. Democracy doesn't just happen. It takes participation. Governments need participation and feedback from their citizens. Join Rob Hutchinson for Dear Parliament, where you get to understand the issues and engage directly with government. Dear Parliament is every Wednesday at midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to yet another edition of Dear Parliament right here on High FM. And if you've missed any previous shows, please feel free to visit our website at www.chaifm.com. That's chaifm.com. And you can click on podcasts and download or even listen to straight online any previous episodes or whatever you might have missed out on. And yes, welcome to another week. It's been quite an interesting week on the political front. Quite a few issues happening in there, especially for our president. He seems to be under a bit of pressure from all angles. Things do seem to be happening there with a motion of no confidence proposed by the DA a short while ago. That's still standing there. Nothing has changed. The DA says they can still go ahead with it. Although there's a few political analysts saying that it might be detrimental to South Africa in general and might actually cause Ramaphosa to lose his presidency. I mean, Ramaphosa is in his final term anyway, with internal party votes happening on, I think it's in 2027. And then his leadership will be up for contestation, and it might happen sooner. I mean, the ANC still doesn't have a majority in parliament anymore, so the chances of it a vote of no confidence working against Ramaphosa are quite high, with most parties quite dissatisfied, and even other sections inside the ANC also not pleased with Ramaphosa, and they also do seem to be chasing a new leader. Who will that be? Well, the speculation's out on that, and the debate is well underway. However, the DA have said that it is, like I said, still going on, but we will remain and see if it does happen. Will the DA survive or pull out of the GNU? Another topic which we discussed last week. Speculation's out on that. And will Helen Zille once again drop an atomic bomb or use a nuclear option, I think, as it's been called by them, by the media? We'll wait and see on that. Other things happening in Parliament, seem to be a lot of concern now around unannounced and unplanned oversight visits from government officials, visiting government sites, unannounced, and concerns raised over that. Well, I'm in two minds. I don't know. If it's an unannounced visit, then there can be nothing to hide and nothing to plan, and we can see things as they are. However, on the other side, it might cause disruptions, say, in schools and hospitals and so on, and with the working processes of the state-owned institutes, and I use that in brackets, working status of South African institutions. As we know, they are all struggling and fighting to stay alive. But yeah, debate out on that. They've talked about introducing a code of conduct and how it must be done, and how these unplanned or planned visits should be conducted and brought about. One good option amongst them was including increasing transparency and credibility, and that proposal puts forward the idea of including civil society in these oversight visits, and members of civil society can go in, certain civil groups can go in, and certain private oversight bodies, journalists, and technical experts, which I think is a great inclusion there. We can actually get an idea of really what's actually really happening down in these institutions. A lot of focus on that this week in Parliament. Happening also this week in Parliament, the continuation of the budget debate. Each ministerial sector and other sectors, state-owned entities and so on, all need to function off a budget. And that budget needs to be presented to Parliament. So quite a bit happening in Parliament this week. Those individual budgets get voted on, and then included in the final budget presentation, which has to be signed off and agreed upon by the end of this month. So a lot of pressure on parliamentarians and all the committees right up until that time, and it's great. Let's get them working. We like that. Let's get our country working great, and the budget sorted out and focused in where it should be happening. Quite a lot happening there with SARS. Before I could talk about SARS, talking about the budget, it's quite interesting that budgets have been cut across the board in certain sectors. One of them in particular being in the division of government that looks after government buildings, Department of Public Works. A whole lot of budget cuts being done there. They used to have a budget of about 1.6 billion. That's now been dropped to 400 million, which is a bit of a problem. As we know, I'm sure anyone who's visited a government building or local municipal office or anything for that matter, you can see the state of government buildings. They're pretty dilapidated. And there's a big call now from the judiciary to revamp the courts. Also, crumbling, falling apart, infrastructure is in a horrific state. And the call is going out to the private sector, funny enough, to assist and advise on how to repair and rebuild the courts. Quite interesting there that the budget's been cut on that as well. Yet budget's been increased in other areas. Oh, and don't forget, there's a billion rand being spent on rebuilding Parliament, the Parliament building itself. In fact, that's probably increased to several billion by now. And SARS was having a bit of a problems week. I had to file company PAYE and couldn't do it, and all the systems were down. And as you know, you don't pay, I think, by the sixth of the month, you get fined quite heavy. All business owners should know that. I was like panicking a little bit, but no, they've announced that you can put it till the 14th now to pay. And it's quite revealing here that the reason for their downtime was a system overload due to higher than expected volumes. A lot of people paying the tax this year, all of a sudden. Why? Is that a good sign? Bad sign? I don't know. Compliance seems to be up. Government making more money, which means government can spend more money. And we know the rest of that sentence. We don't need to go any further into that. But otherwise, I saw an interesting headline that South Africans are poorer than the rest of the world due to our economy taking a major downturn. Rather concerning. Yeah, and that will lead into more poverty, more unemployment, and so on. Interesting. We'll be talking to Kieran Ryan again later. Listeners, stay tuned for that. Kieran will be chatting about. Kieran and I will be chatting about the unemployment rate and a whole host of other topics, which poses to be good. Kieran, how are you doing, by the way?
I'm doing great, Rob. Good to speak to you again, as always.
Yes.
What a wild week. What a wild week with Trump tariffs and all sorts of things going on.
Yes, the Trump tariffs. Oh, what a interesting topic that is. I think they get implemented today. And we'll have to see. Well, today was the final day of the talks or discussions between them. I think decisions have to be made by today. The deadline was today. That should be great.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
Yeah, and I always have to remind our listeners that democracy doesn't just happen. We have to work hard at it and keep it going in between elections, get involved, have your say on proposals, changes, policy amendments, and so on. And let's make South Africa great again. To quote someone else there. Oh, Kieran, man, it's good to see you again. You mentioned all some interesting things. What's been going on your side of the world?
Well, the big news of the week was the tariff increase imposed by Donald Trump on South Africa, which was a blanket 30%. Okay, there's a little bit of nuance to that. But it's higher, 30% is higher than was imposed on South Korea and Vietnam, for example, which, Vietnam, when crawling to Donald Trump and dropped their tariffs on U.S. imports to 0%, still, they got a 25% tariff imposed on them. We have got a 30% tariff. Now, excluded from that are critical minerals for the United States, so the platinum group metals, gold, chrome, and coal. They will attract 0% tariffs when they're exported from South Africa to the U.S. Oh. And also bear in mind that that accounts for about half of what South Africa exports to the U.S. So that is quite a relief to South Africa. Oh. Where the pain will really start to be felt is on the export of cars. Remember, cars were covered by the AGOA, the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, which is pretty much a dead letter at the moment. And so where we had 0% tariffs before, in April, Donald Trump imposed a 25% tariff. So we've gone from 0 to 25%. That's going to hurt. That's going to hurt our car manufacturers. The other thing is steel and aluminium. Steel is now 50%. It was previously 25%. And aluminium at 50% was previously 10%. Wow. So that's going to hurt as well. But I think the big area for us is going to be, apart from cars, agricultural products at 30%. Now, most of those products previously entered the United States duty-free under the AGOA Act. And I think where, you know, if you've been to the States, it was always quite fun going into a supermarket and seeing South African wines displayed alongside California, Chile, French, Portuguese wines, and, you know, all competitively price. They'd always be around this sort of $8-$10 mark. I was there at Christmas time, and, you know, I always make it a point to go and see how are South African products doing there. And by the way, I found biltong. Biltong is becoming a thing.
Really? In the United States. Not beef jerky anymore, just biltong.
No, I mean, jerky's rubbish. It doesn't compare to South African biltong.
No, nothing compared.
But it seems most of that biltong is not imported. It's made locally. I think the Americans have cottoned onto this, and it's we've lost out on that. You know, we should have jumped the gun on that and started up a big, you know, biltong factory. But
that's cultural appropriation, man. We need to do something about that immediately, along with the Afrikaners. They can, you know, they can protest about biltong being there. Maybe that's where those farmers went over. I wonder if that could be they're making biltong.
I bet you they've got some plan like that, you know, is to get biltong going or make boerewors. I mean, there are places, I lived in the States for a couple of years some time ago in Florida and California. And what I really missed was the South African tea, Five Roses. I found American tea just doesn't hold a candle to South African tea. And, you know, then you get things like boerewors. I think it's South African's contribution to international cuisine. you do kind of miss these things, you know, I guess because we grew up with it.
Yeah. There's many things like that, absolutely. But Kieran, explain how these tariffs work. So these tariffs are coming in and there's tariffs going out. So goods that we export can we call it an import duty, or is it just a separate tariff that is placed on goods from South African goods entering the US, which makes South African goods more expensive inside the US? And then there has to be a reciprocation, I think, where it has to be the trade balance to avoid a trade deficit. How does that whole system work?
Yeah, so currently we have about a $9 billion, the United States has a $9 billion deficit with South Africa. In other words, we are importing $9 billion less than we're exporting to the U.S. Mm-hmm. What Donald Trump is trying to do with all countries around the world is to get that down to as close to zero as possible. And he's doing this using the mechanism of tariffs. So just taking wine, which you've been talking about a minute ago, if you are now imposing a 30% duty tariff on wines going into the United States, wine that would previously cost, say, $10, theoretically would now cost $13. That's pretty significant. It's very competitive because you do see in these supermarkets wines from all around the world. It is the biggest consumer market in the world. I guess apart from China, it's very difficult to know, compare China with the US because China is a more closed economy. But you are going to see this is going to impact our wine exports. How do we, by the way, I think that this is done under what they call Section 232 tariffs. This is a law in the United States which allows Donald Trump to adjust tariffs. It allows the president to do this. He obviously has advisors who sit behind him and guide him on this. But the whole purpose is to get this trade deficit, this imbalance between imports and exports with the U.S. down to as close to zero as possible. I think Donald Trump has shown himself to be a fairly mercurial guy and changed his mind very frequently. So the feeling is that these may not be cast in stone. What is a bit disappointing is that South Africa, it takes a hell of a long time to come up with responses. They were asked to come with a countervailing offer to the United States, which we haven't done. All of this is handled by ITAC, which is the International Trade Advisory Committee. I think that's what it's called. It falls under the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. But they're so backlogged with all kinds of applications for tariff increases. Our steel industry is dying. So they're having to try and rescue that using tariffs on foreign imports into South Africa. And I think they dropped the ball here. They should have acted far more quickly. And by the way, these come into effect on the 1st of August. So what are we? We're a couple of weeks away from that.
Yeah. And I think as I mentioned, the deadline for these proposals or alternative proposals and discussions is today. So you're right. It is kind of disappointing to see a lack of response from South Africa in many sectors. However, we did respond on some issues, but I don't know. Do you know anything about those? I can't seem to find any details.
No. I mean, I think what the U.S. is looking for is a comprehensive response. I think the minerals issue, that was always because we are the largest. We produce 80% of the world's platinum group metals in South Africa. Oh. We're also one of the top 10 gold producers. We're also one of the top 4 or 5 in chrome and coal. I'm not quite sure about coal. I think China's bigger than us. But these are very important, minerals and commodities in the United States. So they don't want to mess with that. I think what Trump is going to be sensitive to is what impact all of these tariffs are going to have on growth. He does watch the polls. He does watch the market indicators. He does watch the inflation figures. And if he starts to see things going a little bit off the cliff, I think we could see a very, very sharp response from him. He might drop these tariffs. He might increase them because he is already on top of this 30%. He has threatened another 10% for countries that are in the BRICS alliance. That's his jab, if you like, at BRICS, which is trying to be a counterweight to the US Western model of economic dominance in the world. That's what he says, but he often says things, he often announces things on Truth Social, which is his own social media platform. And then, 2 days later, changed his mind. Very hard to read Donald Trump, I must say.
Yeah, no, it is. I looked at Truth Social Media. I didn't find it very appealing whatsoever. I don't ever think it's just a Donald Trump versus Elon Musk, Twitter versus the truth. I can't figure it out what's it, but it's just a political mouthpiece, and that's all it is. But yeah, I mean, you're talking about, tariffs placed on South African imports to the US, or exports from here to the US. And the other way around, are there any conditions attached to this 30%? Does South Africa have to meet certain targets or reduce in our tariffs on imported goods? Or is there a deal, quid pro quo, or who knows what it is?
It was a very brief letter that was sent out by Donald Trump, and it doesn't go into any of these conditions other than that they are, and this is through a series of meetings which have happened with the White House over the last weeks and months, that they are expecting a reciprocal offer, which they haven't got, certainly haven't got a comprehensive one. And I think implied in Donald Trump's letter is displeasure with South Africa. It's displeasure with a number of different things. Our political alignment with Iran, taking Israel to the International Court of Justice over the events in Gaza. I think these are weighing there in the background, kind of unspoken, but we know that they are factors. And I think also Donald Trump has mentioned this before. There was an Afrikaner delegation just got back about a week or 10 days ago that went to the White House to inform them about South Africa's internal politics. And a lot of the discussion there, I understand, was about South Africa's race-based laws. Yes. The Employment Equity Act, which I think we discussed a week or two ago. And the fact that there is, certainly the Afrikaners are making a very powerful case with the White House. I say the Afrikaners, certain Afrikaner organizations have gone and made this representation. And I think presented to the White House the fact that, you know, whites are a discriminated class in South Africa, and that it's unfair. And Donald Trump seems to have, and his advisors seem to have taken that to heart. One of those who was in the White House was Gerard Papenfuss, who is the president or the CEO of the National Employers Association of South Africa. And there were a few other heavyweights, you know, from the Afrikaner community went there as well, making the case for, if we're going to normalize relations with South Africa, and talking now as, you know, the White House, then there's got to be more equity. And when I say equity, fairness in the laws that are applied to the whole population of South Africa.
Yeah, I think we've seen that spread to other sectors as well. I mean, Elon Musk's Starlink is one of those that's been sidelined because he doesn't want to comply with the 30% ownership that BEE does require when in that telecommunications sector. In fact, there's a policy shift now that's been proposed that will allow him to actually operate in South Africa by bypassing that requirement. However, he will still have to invest a significant amount of money in South Africa, especially. And what he's proposed there is investing in or providing free internet access to rural areas and rural schools in particular, which I think will be greatly beneficial to South Africa. If we've seen a relaxation in that sector, then my thinking is that it'll probably spread to other sectors as well. And we know how government works. You know, one sector does follow the next, and eventually government is towing the line. But there does seem to be some pushback from the ANC and other players as well, which is once again pushing the BEE regulations and strengthening BEE in other sectors. I'm just so tired of it. I think it's BEE is detrimental to South Africans in general. Doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, what color of your skin. It just doesn't work for this country whatsoever. We need to move to a merit-based system and focus on educating people to become better at what they do, to be able to perform and to be able to to win jobs and tariffs, and I win jobs and tenders and everything else based on purely merit. Now that'll benefit South Africans entirely, and it'll boost the economy considerably, and so on. So I think hopefully that the Starlink thing will push that forward, and I think perhaps that's what Trump is focusing on, given the input from Musk and his team there, the Doge team, who seem to have been sorting out all these grants to third world countries and so on. But who knows? Like you say, there's a strong alliance with BRICS countries.
Yeah, I think this is the new reality that we're living in, and South Africa's kind of been dragged out of the previous century and it's Marxist kind of indoctrination and thinking into the real politic of the world today. And we have to start focusing on growth. And that really means some of these sacred cows going under the rubric of transformation and black economic empowerment, they have to be up for discussion. And we have to start looking at this very, very seriously, because it is now becoming an obstacle to our relations with the rest of the world. That, after 30 years, it's been a terrible failed experiment. Of course, there was great need for transformation. There was great need, to level the playing field. But the methods that have been used, and it's not correct to say that the playing field is level yet, but how do you achieve that? Well, other countries have shown that it can be done through just massive growth and aggressive growth. Just look at China. This is like 400 million people rescued out of poverty in 20 years. Singapore, countries like that. These are the sort of models that we should be looking at. And China, by the way, is normally a communist country. You're not going to have much influence there on the political outcomes that happen in the Chinese Communist Party, but you certainly can benefit from the enormous amount of economic activity that is going on there. And we've been limping along at around about 1% growth for the last decade. That's just unacceptable. It's killing the nation.
Yeah.
And we have to be realistic about that. And by the way, these tariffs, I was just speaking to Donald Mackay from XA Global Trade Advisors. And he's saying this could impact up to 0.5% of our GDP, just the US tariffs.
Wow.
So it's not to say that is going to be the case, but everywhere we look, we're seeing these growth forecasts for 2025 being sort of peeled back, and was originally Capital Economics at the beginning of the year saying it's going to be 2%, maybe 2.2% growth. Now we'll be lucky if we get 1.3.
No, I think
we've just lost close to a percentage of GDP through whatever mishaps have happened in this economy, and we cannot go on like that.
No, we cannot go on like that at all, and it's detrimental for all businesses, and especially small business. So.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
So, Kieran, you mentioned something earlier on, just before the break, about China has managed to lift 400,000 people out of absolute poverty. That's fascinating. It really is. I mean, we've seen a lot of unemployment in South Africa, and a drastic increase in the unemployment rate. Do you think we'll ever be able to do that in South Africa?
I do. I'm optimistic. I think we're moving closer and closer towards this abyss. And the closer you get to the abyss, you kind of look down into the depths of hell, or you turn back and you start correcting course. And a lot of the guys that who are the senior people in the ANC have been to China, studied there. I know some of them studied in East Germany and Russia and so on. So they've been very exposed to the communist ideology. But I think China is, and to an extent Russia as well, is a fairly unique case, because they emerged from that. And I think the dawning realization there was that communism was just a race to the bottom. You know, they took over all the means of production. Oh, these are horrible terms. You know, the means of production, the proletariat, and all that kind of thing. But what happened in China was, in the 1970s, they started to liberalize. It started with the agricultural sector. Everything that was produced by the farmers went to the state. And of course, people would, you know, do the minimum amount of work so that they didn't get, you know, punished or you know, killed or whatever. Well, and they were then allowed to keep a proportion of the crops that they produced every year. And all of a sudden, you saw this flowering in the agricultural sector. People started to accumulate wealth and they produced more. And that really provided the seed capital for the manufacturing growth, which came thereafter. Then, of course, you know, the Western countries started to get involved. They mobilized capital for factories. They started to share technology. And look at China today. I mean, it's in so many respects the world leader in tech. Look at these. I was talking to somebody yesterday who went on a high-speed train going at 300 and something kilometers per hour. Yeah. It's like going from here to Durban in a few hours.
About as fast as I drive, yeah.
And he said the cost, what did you say?
This is about as fast as I drive, yeah.
Okay. But the cost of that train trip, I think he said was like 300 rand.
What?
Now, normally you would, you know, you'd hop on a plane if you're going from Joburg to Durban. What would it cost you? A couple of thousand, maybe?
Yeah.
And there you got something which is, you know, 300, 350 rand, high speed, absolutely luxurious train. I've never been to China. I don't have any experience of this, but what I'm hearing is it's extraordinary. And you look at these cities that they're creating, you know, Dubai, for example, which I have been to. But these Chinese cities, the other thing that he mentioned was he was last there a decade ago. And the thing that really struck him was the pollution, the air quality. This time, completely different. They've cleaned up the air. So they move so fast. Wow. You know, they build roads in times which almost seem to defy any kind of logic or reason. They just are very, very productive and capable people. That's possible in South Africa, but you have a population which has been promised all kinds of things, and it's almost like the not apartheid government. You know, if you define yourself as the in terms of the enemy that you've defeated, if apartheid was the enemy and you become the not apartheid party, this is what you get. You get an extremely race-based society with a new elite. And that's really what has happened. You've had a new elite that has risen to the top and they've sucked the wealth out of the country. The Institute of Race Relations did some numbers on this, and it's a staggering amount of money. It's like 1.4 trillion has gone to 100 individuals.
Yes.
Think about that.
Yeah, that's insane. Absolutely insane. And it's, do they name these individuals? That'll be interesting.
They're the obvious ones. You know, the guys who feature prominently in the business elite.
Yeah,
and they circulate amongst each other. So the trickle down effect is the thing that's missing. If we're going to have true empowerment in this country, it's got to be through growth and through training, and people, you know, starting up their own businesses.
Yes, and that we can attribute to BEE laws and race-based laws. There's no doubt about that. And as you said, it's created that elite, and it hasn't benefited those people that it was brought about and intended to benefit through that trickle-down effect. That trickle-down effect. That's from Reaganomics, I think. Trickle-down effect. Yeah. But yeah, it is. It's done nothing for the unemployment rate in South Africa, which I think unofficially sits at about 46%, but officially 33%. But there's some discussion around that as to whether it's the actual figure or not.
Yeah. 46% how do they measure unemployment in this country is if you are you've lost all hope and you've given up looking for a job, well, you fall off the unemployment register. It's only those people who are looking for jobs that get counted. And even on that, the softer measure that I've just mentioned, people who are actually looking for jobs, we're at 33%. Yeah. But Harry Fourie, the CEO of Capitec, he says, well, we're kind of missing the ball here a little bit. It's probably closer to 10% if you look at the informal sector, which is a massive net, call it a social welfare net in this country. People aren't sitting around doing nothing. They are doing little businesses. They're building little cottages on their property and they're renting those out, or they're selling something on the street. That is, it's an interesting discussion. StatsSA is not very much in agreement with it, but they have said that they're going to improve their register of informal businesses. And I think we need to do a lot more research into that in this country.
We absolutely do. We absolutely do. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back on the unemployment payroll in a moment.
You are listening to Dear Parliament with Rob Hutchinson, because democracy doesn't just happen.
Yeah, and Kieran, the reason I mentioned unemployment bandwagon is because, as you say, you can make money while officially unemployed. Please don't let SARS find out about this. And in fact, I actually saw an article about how much money the informal market is actually worth. And to SARS, it's worth, I think they estimated about 5 billion rand to SARS. How would they ever go about formalizing the informal market?
Well, they have tried. If you recall, during COVID, the Department of Small, what do they call it? There is a Department of Small Business. I forget the exact name. They offered easy money, cheap loans to small businesses, provided they register with their local municipality. And they had this laundry list of registrations that they wanted. You got to register with the CIPC, which is the that stands for the Commission for Intellectual Property and something.
Yeah, companies and intellectual property.
Companies and intellectual properties. Yeah, the CIPC. So you had to register with that. You had to register with SARS. You had to register with your local municipality and a few other things. And I, at the time, went to a few of these organizations. They call them NGOs. They're not really NGOs, but they're private funding. They provide funding for small businesses. What's the take up of this easy money that the government is throwing? And they said 12% of their members in this one organization, which has about 250,000 people on their books, which shows that the informal sector wants to remain informal. They do not want to formalize themselves because they see what's coming. And there've been various attempts since then, since COVID, to try and rope in more and more people into the formal sector. There's this kind of schizophrenia with government. They recognize that the informal sector is a safety net for the people who don't have jobs. They've got nowhere else to go. So let's just kind of leave it be. And that's the way it's treated through Africa. But more and more, you are seeing this where they're trying to, SARS, the one department that works with exceptional efficiency, they are looking for every rand that they can get their hands on. So they want these people to register with SARS so that they can start collecting more tax. I mean, you've already mentioned 5 billion. I'm pretty sure that's an understatement. Bear in mind that these people are, there's probably not a lot of VAT, or there's a lot of VAT leakage that happens in the informal sector.
Good point.
And there's certainly probably zero in terms of income tax coming out. But what they are trying to do is to get more and more formalized businesses so that we can collect more money. And, I think we should be a little bit concerned. This is always something that you start to see when you have governance mismanagement on the scale that we have in South Africa. You get a tax department which is really on its game and is collecting everything that it can get its hands on. It is a sign of breakdown in delivery. People are protesting and they are trying to find ways not to pay tax. And, you know, in the crypto space, for example, what people do, guys who bought Bitcoin back in 2013 or 2014, that's worth, you know, they'd be worth a lot of money today. But you can live on, you know, you can borrow against your Bitcoin and you don't pay any tax.
No, you know? I didn't know that. That's interesting. Yeah. Know. Fantastic. I love
it. I found that out not so long ago.
Oh, okay. Some ideas are popping up in my mind, yeah?
Well, it's not just Bitcoin, but it's how Elon Musk and all, and Donald Trump even admitted it. You know, this is like you pay your expenses on borrowed money, and money that is repaid is not taxable.
That's fantastic. Oh, good advice there for any business owners, right from Kieran Ryan, right here on 101.9 High FM. And Kieran, you touched on a great topic there for, I think we must explore in our next show, the informal markets, and you touched on crypto. And I think a solution for, or what we, I'm going to make a prediction here, is that we're going to see a big shift to a cashless society within the informal sector, taxis and so on, scan to pay, that's going to be all monitored. The banks are going to become extremely proficient at formalizing the informal market. And I reckon that's a topic we will discuss. So listeners, fortunately, we've run out of time once again, but definitely tune in next time and we'll be discussing once again with Kieran Ryan. And we'll answer some, maybe I think we'll answer some hard questions there around the informal market and a cashless society. But as I said, Kieran, thank you so much for once again coming here and chatting to us.
Thanks, Rob.
It's wonderful. Thank you for having you. Yeah. Listeners, unfortunately, that's it. If you missed it, catch up on our website at www.highfm.com. And we'll see you next time. Remember to stay democratically engaged, active, and responsible. Ciao for now.